If you have a Bible, we're going to the book of Acts, capítulo número 16 del libro de Hechos. Si tienen ahí un ejemplar de la palabra de Dios, abran sus Biblias. Hechos, capítulo 16. We're going to look into a couple of verses from chapter 16 of the book of Acts. And one of the reasons why we're going to go to the book of Acts, there's a couple of reasons on a day like this. And I want you to keep this in mind, because the book of Acts is one of those books that I feel that is like a hinge. Is that how you say it? Hinge? Cuando habla acerca de una camioneta que le conectas un flatbed, una traila decimos, que le conectas algo y tiene esa bola donde hace la conexión. ¿Sí? Hinge, se dice. So, that I think that's the book of Acts for the New Testament and actually for the Bible. And this is what I mean by the hinge, okay? Estamos hablando de la perspectiva donde tienes los evangelios. You got Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which are the Gospels. And then you have Acts, which I believe is that connector, ¿sí? Esa conexión que hace los evangelios to the remaining of the New Testament, lo que viene siendo las epístolas. And I'm going to try to present to you the relevancy, why this matters, la razón por la cual esta conexión es de extrema importancia en una mañana como esta. There's a couple of reasons why, and one of them has to do precisely how the gospel is presented in the Bible. Hay una razón por la cual la Biblia fue escrita, la Biblia no fue escrita a través de nuestra perspectiva. See, the way that you and I think, we are 21st century Western individuals. We're in this side of the hemisphere. Estamos en este lado del mundo, en el siglo XXI, and by default, you and I think linear. Pensamos de una manera lineal nosotros. Pensamos en cuestiones de tiempo, pensamos en eventos, pensamos en fechas, pensamos en sucesos. So we think, you know, through events and dates, because we're linear thinkers. The Bible was not written through a linear thinker mindset. The Hebrew mind, la manera de lo que pensaban o piensan los hebreos en ese tiempo, the Hebrew mind didn't see life in a way of a linear mindset. No pensaban de esa manera. Por lo tanto, here's my point. When you look at the Bible, potentially one of the struggles is that you and I want to impose our worldview, our mindset. Queremos imponer la manera en que vemos la vida a la palabra de Dios. And when I think, tell you that we think linear or chronologically, pensamos de una manera lineal a través de fechas, the Bible is not written like that. What's my point? Here's my point. The Bible in reality, instead of thinking of, again, a chronology, si pensamos en la vida de Jesús, la Biblia no nos presenta la historia de Jesús. The Bible does not present the history of Jesus, but instead it gives us the stories of Jesus. ¿Sí? Antes de que hubiera social media y todos los teléfonos donde tomamos pictures todo el tiempo con eso, right before, you know, before that generation, some of you may remember photo albums. ¿Alguien recuerda los álbumes de fotográficos? ¿Cuántos todavía tienen álbumes? You still have some of those at home? Anybody? Somebody? Yay! How many of you have no idea what a photo album is? Sí, algunos de los muchachos no tienen la menor idea que es un álbum de fotografía, ¿verdad? Porque ahora están en Instagram. That's what Instagram is today. It's a photo album. So, I want you to think of the Bible like this. The Bible, see, because in a photo album, if you think of a quinceañera, piensa en una quinceañera, por ejemplo. En una quinceañera, tomas un montón de fotos o tomas un video, right? Well, I'm using video, however you take a video. And typically, in a photo album, you don't put all the pictures. No pones todas las fotos en un álbum fotográfico. Pones las fotos que seleccionas. You select those pictures, right? That's what you do. You select the pictures. Watch this. According to what you experience, but specifically, according to the audience, who you want to convey this photo album to. Estás pensando no solamente en la experiencia, pero a quién le quieres compartir estas fotos. So it's between the actual event and also the recipient. So who is going to see these photos eventually. Piensen en cuestión del evento, lo que sucedió, y a quién se los quieres comunicar. I think this is exactly what the Bible, in this case, the Gospels are. Otra vez, los evangelios, Mateo, Marcos. Sí, los evangelistas, Matthew, which is the author, and then Mark, and then when you go through all four of them, what they're going to do, they're going to choose not the, once again, this is not about the story of Jesus, but the stories of Jesus. Están seleccionando las historias que ellos, como autores, this is the authors of the Bible, they got from the real author of the Bible, which is the Holy Spirit, es la inspiración que recibieron, and obviously, most of them, if not all of them, but most of them, I'm saying most of them because Luke is, we don't think that Luke is one of them, but potentially Mark is not, pero they were what we call eyewitnesses, testigos oculares, Eyewitnesses. So they saw Jesus. They interviewed the people who saw Jesus, but they pick specific areas. In the book of Acts, it's exactly the same thing. En el libro de los Hechos, es exactamente la misma cosa. El autor de Hechos, ¿sí?, está seleccionando, he's choosing specific narratives or specific conversions. Son las conversiones de ciertas personas que están sucediendo en la Biblia. So I want you to get this in your mind, because one of the reasons is this is the reality where the Bible is written. The Bible is written in a very hostile culture. ¿Sí? Hostile against Christianity. Es una cultura que está hostil, que está oponiéndose al cristianismo. Y la otra es que es una cultura, una iglesia confundida. I'm going to argue that this is the perfect scenario. No sé si han escuchado del término de perfect storm. Cuando hablan del ojo del huracán, cuando dos huracanes categoría 5 se juntan allá en el, bueno, ojalá sea en el océano, pero se juntan. When you think of two category 5 hurricanes, they come together, they call the perfect storm. So I think this is the perfect storm. Now listen to me. This is the perfect storm for Christianity not to survive. Cuando ves esta realidad, que esta es la realidad donde la Biblia fue escrita, el cristianismo está moviendo entre una cultura hostil y una iglesia completamente confundida. Sí, en este contexto, el cristianismo no debió de haber sobrevivido. It should not have survived. Now, why do you think it survived? ¿Por qué creen que el cristianismo, 2,000 years later, Christianity is still present and the church is present today? Why do you think that's the case? The reason why is exactly why you are saved. La razón, si es que tú eres un seguidor de Jesús, la razón que tú eres salvo y te mantienes salvo, this is the reason why you're saved. You're saved because God said so. Es la única razón. La razón por la cual es porque simplemente Cristo dijo en Mateo capítulo 16, this is Jesus speaking, Matthew chapter 16, speaking of pictures, remember? Not the history, but the stories. En una de las stories, Cristo va a decir en Mateo capítulo 16, que las puertas del Hades, the gates of Hades, will not prevail against the church. So, even though this is the reality, again, we are looking at this from the perspective that, in this case, this is one of the reasons why we believe. So, what we're going to see today in Acts is precisely not only the what, which is the message of Christ, but also how the message came to people. ¿Cómo es que el mensaje fue presentado? ¿Cómo es que el mensaje vino a estas personas? Lo interesante del asunto es esto, porque es lo que vamos a ver en estas cosas. Es que en las diferencias que vamos a ver, because the Bible gives you, again, not the history, but the stories, ¿sí? You're going to see differences in the stories. Son diferentes historias, but they are related. They have an interconnection within themselves. Entonces, ve la diversidad, which, by the way, this is a huge statement, and I'm gonna make it. I know this is risky to make this type of statements publicly, but I think the gospel is risky in most cases. Una de las ironías de nuestra generación con respecto a nuestra diversidad, when you speak of diversity, nuestra diversidad, is that tragically diversity now is being, I'm going to argue, diversity has been exalted, idolized, and even demonized. Yo pienso que la diversidad, el hecho de ser mujer, varón, el hecho de ser millennial, Gen Z, whatever the case may be, la diversidad que tenemos hoy en día la hemos exaltado, idolatrado, y yo digo que hasta satanizado. What's the point? Here's the point. De que el Dios de la Biblia nos ha creado con diferencias. It's obvious that we are very different from each other. Do you agree? ¿Estamos de acuerdo en eso? ¿Que somos diferentes? Si no me creen, cásense. When you get married, you'll see the differences. And you'll be reminded of those differences, right? Mamás, cuando tienen hijos, uno, dos, tres, cuatro, los hijos que tienen, cada hijo es diferente. Now, listen to me for a second. Sí, cada una de esas diferencias que son literalmente, is what we call the fingerprint of God. Dios nos hizo de esa manera. Are you tracking? Nos hizo de esa manera. Okay, pero aquí es el punto. La manera en que Dios nos hizo, sí, this is when you come back to God's original design. El diseño original de Dios es que la manera en que nos hizo, see, the making, the differences, it simply means to an end. It's not the end. The uniqueness, who you are and where you come from, who mama was and grandmama and the church and the previous pastor and where you grew up, all those things matter. And who you are today matters. But you are not the end. You are not the main reason. Es simplemente el vehículo. Las diferencias son el vehículo para presentar, no a nosotros, pero a nuestro creador, who made us. And I'm bringing this up of the making and the differences because, see, the Bible is going to teach us, it's going to show us through the book of Acts, is that those differences, how people responded to the gospel differently. ¿sí? La gente, esta mañana vamos a ver un solo ejemplo, one example today, because that's all we got time for, but those differences are going to be very similar. They're going to have this commonality that everyone, even though they came to Jesus differently, everybody came to Jesus. Al final de la conversación se trata de la persona de Jesús, no se trata de la conversión de la persona. Now, listen, again, this is controversial, I know it is. This is not about you going to heaven, not you being saved. You being saved is extremely important, but what this is all about is the person of Christ. Because when you understand who Christ is, now you understand who you are, and then you'll know what to do. Vamos a hacer again. Cuando sabemos quién es Dios o quién es Cristo, sabremos quiénes somos nosotros y eventualmente sabremos qué hacer. Tragically, most people, because once again, our differences and uniqueness, we have exalted, we have idolized, and even demonized. That's because we reverse the order. We tragically, for those who believe in God, lo que creemos en Dios y hemos invertido el orden trágicamente, is that we come to God not because we want to know who He is. We come to God not because we want to know who we are. We come to God because if there is a God, He needs to tell me what to do. Because I got places to go and people to see. Are you tracking? ¿Sí? Típicamente buscamos a Dios porque lo vemos como, en inglés decimos, cosmic butler. Es simplemente un sirviente cósmico que no me interesa quién es él realmente. Con respecto a mi identidad, yo sé quién soy yo. I know exactly who I am. Because it's about me, right? It's about my experiences. No, solamente quiero un Dios, sobre todo cuando decimos, se me atora el zapato. Have you heard that phrase before? When things get a little tough and rough and difficult and you don't know what to do, and then you call upon God because God is supposed to X, Y, and Z. See, I think you're setting yourself for deception. Es donde caemos en una situación donde si Dios no hace lo que pienso y lo que quiero, y si no me indica qué hacer, entonces Dios no existe. Bueno, again, the book of Acts is going to give us multiple ways of how people actually came to know the Lord, and it's going to give us that those differences. The other thing is that we need to understand that when it comes to the gospel, all right, in this specific case, see, the gospel for religious people, or what we call a seeker. La palabra es simpatizante, que sería la cuestión de alguien que está buscando, someone that feels and senses the need or the desire to seek the Lord. And I think this is one of those examples. And again, I'm going to say this again. The differences represents for me, es lo que representan esas diferencias, la manera en que probablemente cada una de las fotos son diferentes, tienen diferentes experiencias, pero hay una cosa en común. There is a commonality in this whole scenario. So again, I want you to just look at this scenario. This is one case. There are three cases in chapter 16, which we don't have the time to read, but just one case. Here's what's taking place. Vean lo que dice, versículo 11, capítulo 16. Dice, so after setting sail from Troas, we ran into... lo que está haciendo el escritor, el historiador, and I said the writer of... the guy with the album, right? Is the writer. That's what I'm saying. Lo que está diciendo, está dando indicaciones. He's giving you those details because he's an eyewitness of the places that they go or they went. Verse 12 continues giving you places such as Philippi and then Macedonia, which is a Roman colony, and they were spending some days in this city. Now, look at how this is how the seeking begins. Eso es donde empieza esa búsqueda con respecto a Dios. On the Sabbath day, we went outside the gate to a riverside where we were thinking that there was a place of prayer. And we sat down and began speaking to the women who had assembled. Si se ponen a pensar, otra vez, estamos hablando acerca del movimiento del cristianismo. Y cuando hablamos de ese movimiento, no se movió a través de una historia, se movió a través de historias. Did you get that picture? It's not about a history, although there is a history, but it's about the stories. And right now we're looking at the story, one of the stories where they come into this place, llegan a este lugar donde es, encontramos que es el día de reposo. This matters because of Jewish culture, although these are not Jewish cities, estas no son iglesias o ciudades judías. Pero es un día de reposo en el cual empiezan y llegan a esta orilla del río. Apparently, the whole concept of coming to a riverside is because there is no synagogue in this place. There is no place of worship. And yet, even though there is no place of worship, and yet, we come to the place where we're going to experience prayer and we're going to sit down. Nos sentamos, dice, porque este es lugar de oración. Now, here's the beauty of the story. Verse 14, versículo 14. Dice que había una mujer, cierta mujer. So there is a lady, there is a woman, by the name of, come on, say it. What's her name? It's Lydia. Lydia is the name of the lady. I'm okay. See, he's putting the album together and he's taking those pictures. And he's putting the album because he wants to convey in a very hostile culture, in a very confused church, ¿verdad? Una cultura hostil y una iglesia confundida. No sé, pero no sé si están de acuerdo conmigo, pero it seems to me that the context of Acts is very similar to our context today. I think today we're in a very hostile culture. ¿No? ¿Sí? ¿Conmigo? Estamos en una cultura bastante hostil. Es hostil en contra de la santidad de Dios. The hostility is against the holiness of God. Because I'm going to say it again. Because we have taken our uniqueness and our diversity. I'm going to say it again. Uniqueness and diversity. And we have exalted. We have literally idolized it. And I believe we have demonized it. It's all about us. It's about me. It's about my skin color, my personal preferences. Entonces, esa hostilidad que está reflejando, creo que es relevante a la de nosotros. The uniqueness on a day like this is because God is going to navigate and express his mission, his purposes through a lady. Lo hace a través de una mujer. Lo hace a través de una dama. Y esta mujer llamada Lydia, who is she? Well, a couple of things. The Bible tells us that she was a seller of purple. En este contexto da la impresión que en esta ciudad o en este contexto es donde aparentemente culturally, governmentally, societally, this is one of those unique places where women are able to excel. Típicamente en esa cultura, mujeres no tienen la oportunidad de salir adelante. And when I say excel, this is what I mean by excel. I think that she will be, in today's culture, an influencer and a YouTuber. Es lo que sería hoy en día Lydia. Sería una mujer de influencia, una mujer agresiva, una mujer de éxito. Una mujer que tendría muchos followers. She was a lady of influence. She was a lady of character. I'm going to say it again. This is what we call uniqueness. This is the way God designed this lady. Es la manera en que fue diseñada. ¿Me explico? Esta cuestión. Personalidad, inclinaciones, habilidades, maneras de ser. Es simplemente la manera en que Dios la diseñó. I'm going to argue that this is what we call amoral. There's no bad, there's no... Puede, en otras palabras, la personalidad, your personality can potentially be moved into something that praises and exalts the Lord, which also your personality can potentially go into the opposite direction and really become detrimental, simplemente por tu personalidad. So personality is not the issue. The issue is who's going to rule and who's going to take over your personality. Okay, so this is what the Bible says. No solamente es una mujer de la cual vende, ¿sí? La cual está describiendo donde estaba escuchando esa mujer llamada Lydia, ¿sí? En esta ciudad de Tiatira, ¿sí? And then she describes her also, obviously gives the city, but then she was a worshiper of God. So within her uniqueness, she also was seeking the Lord. Es una mujer que adoraba a Dios. ¿Por qué? Acabo de explicarlo. Because the uniqueness of the individual, who you are, ¿sí? The making of who, where you've been and the things that you have done or should have done and you haven't done, whatever the case may be. Lo que eres es el producto de algo que Dios ha estado laborando, obrando, y ahora es tiempo de expresarlo a través de la adoración a Dios. The component of worshiping God in this culture is something that the Bible describes as God-fearers. La Biblia lo describe como temerosos de Dios. The implication, here's the implication. And this is huge, because again, I'm going to come back to this over and over again. Acts is a photo album, and the writer, which is the Holy Spirit, through the physician, which is Luke, okay? El escritor humano es Lucas, el autor de la Biblia es el Espíritu Santo, so tiene un álbum fotográfico, and he's choosing these photos, está escogiendo estas imágenes, esas experiencias reales, to convey a message in a hostile culture in a confused church. Have we made that clear? Es una cultura completamente hostil y es una iglesia completamente confundida. En ese contexto es que encontramos la historia. Por lo tanto, cuando hablamos de alguien que es un God-fearer, ¿sí? Alguien que es temeroso de Dios, which in Lydia fits into that description, implies that she was not a Jew. Who was she? Now, I'm going to say that again. Please look at me for a second. This is a huge statement. And we typically don't make justice to the Bible. Típicamente, porque nuestra tendencia, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. We are not necessarily driven by who God is, much less who we are, because I think we know who we are, or we think we know who we are. If there is a God, I need for him to tell me what to do. Y menciono esto, la cuestión de que no nos interesa mucho la cuestión de Dios o quién soy yo, pero más que nada que me diga qué hacer. Esa es la razón. Because this is how I know this happened. This is my struggle, and I'm assuming that's your struggle as well. Es las cosas que batallamos todos. Cuando venimos a la Biblia, we typically do not approach the Bible as a one single narrative or story where the main character is Jesus. That's not how we approach the Bible. We typically approach the Bible this way. Sunday school, whatever, you know, whatever we do, meetings like this, we come to the Bible and we look at the stories individually, and then we don't look at Jesus. We simply want to say, okay, here in the Bible, there's got to be a principle, there's got to be something that can tell me what to do. Remember that? Because it's about God telling me what to do. And I'm bringing this up to you because in this case, the fact that she's a Gentile, this is a major deal. El hecho de que no sea judío, ¿por qué? Porque cuando hablamos acerca del evangelio, when we speak of the gospel, the mindset of these people was still, todavía la manera en que piensa esta gente es que están diciendo el evangelio es solamente para los de cierto color de piel, their specific background and mindset, which is the Jewish people. Well, in this case, she is a Gentile, and she's been studying the Hebrew Bible. Es lo que significa cuando dice God-fearer. Es una mujer que ha estado temerosa de Dios, que ha estado leyendo la palabra de Dios. Therefore, here's what happens. As a worshiper of God. Now, by the way, just quick parenthesis. The fact that she is not a Gentile, the fact that she's a God-fearer, and ethnically, cuando hablamos de su raza, es gentil, no es judía. Esto que está aquí no significa de que ella es creyente. She is not a believer yet. But she's in the process. That's why we said the word seeker. Hablamos acerca de alguien que está simpatizando o está deseando las cosas de Dios. So this is the way that she's going through it. Now, look at the implication. Now, in that context, the Bible says that the Lord opened her heart to respond. En ese contexto, es que Dios abre, dice que ella adoraba a Dios y el Señor abrió su corazón para que recibiera. So, here a couple of things. Okay. So, how did God open her heart? La pregunta es, ¿cómo es que Dios abre el corazón de ella? Because I'm going to say it again. I don't know where you are today, ladies, Mother's Day, this is extremely important. But many of you, most of you have been catalysts for many of us and most of us to come to know the Lord. Ustedes como damas, como madres, como abuelas, han sido extremadamente importante y crucial, catalíticas decimos, para que el evangelio continúe a través de las generaciones. En este caso, hablando de esa mujer llamada Lydia, when you speak of Lydia as a non-Jewish lady in a city where they are hostile to the gospel, en un contexto hostil, en una iglesia confusa, the question is, how is it that God opened her heart to receive the message? A couple of things in here. Número uno, es que ella tenía que entender lo que estaba leyendo. So here you have the both end of the conversation. Hablamos de las dos caras de una sola moneda. Toda moneda tiene dos caras, ¿verdad? ¿Cuál de las dos es? The answer is yes. How many? Which side? The answer is yes. It's both. Here's the point. You have the volitional, la cuestión de el free will, decimos, de libre albedrío, de decidir. Ella decidió buscar las escrituras. Hablar de God-fearer, to speak of a God-fearer is that she is searching the scriptures of the Jews, the scriptures of the Hebrews. Entonces, ha leído la escritura, y en medio de todo eso, de lo que está leyendo, God is going to intervene. So, which one is it? Now, look at me for a second. The beauty of the gospel is that the God of the Bible, and we're about to see this, that takes the initiative. Él toma la iniciativa, Dios toma la iniciativa, eso implica, and if you think of a basketball game or a football game, piensa en un deporte donde literalmente la pelota está ahora de tu lado. We say this in English, the ball is on your court. Es la cuestión de que ahora tú eres responsable de esto. So apparently, part of the aggressiveness and the decisiveness of this lady is that she assumed responsibility. Asumió responsabilidad de lo que estaba siendo llamada a hacer, que en este caso era a leer la palabra de Dios. I am so glad that you guys are here. Estamos agradecidos que están en este lugar y en esta celebración del Día de las Madres, en un domingo como este. But, aquí está el catch de mi gratitud, ¿sí? If Sundays, on a day like this, is the only place and only day where you are confronted with the Word of God, that is a problem. Este no puede ser, la experiencia de los cultos de domingo o reuniones en iglesia no puede ser el pináculo, no puede ser la experiencia más grande o más personal con respecto a la palabra de Dios. We are responsible to encounter, to be confronted with the Bible on a daily basis. Necesitamos tomar esa responsabilidad de buscar la palabra de Dios, no esperar a que alguien más nos la presente. Now, again, coming into a conversation like this is extremely important. This is a mandate. God commands us to gather together for worship. But this cannot be the only. Let me make another parenthesis. Otra cosa que es extremadamente importante. ¿Por qué no puede ser esto? Especialmente en una iglesia como Coastal Bend, que está buscando pastor y va a buscar pastor, the church is responsible to make sure that whenever somebody preaches and teaches the Bible, they're teaching and preaching the Bible instead of something else. Lo que la persona piensa que es la Biblia. The church is responsible. La iglesia es responsable que cuando alguien presenta la palabra de Dios, que sea la palabra de Dios. Y la única manera que vamos a saber si es la palabra de Dios, adivinen cómo va a ser. Leyendo, ¿qué cosa? La palabra de Dios. I don't know if that might make any sense on this, but the point is that she takes ownership, she takes responsibility of this experience. She's going to place herself. This is huge, ladies. Y sobre todo varones, esto es importante, esto es más importante para el varón que para la mujer, y voy a explicarlo. She's going to place herself under limited and unlimited authority. Es lo que va a hacer. Parte de esa responsabilidad es que ella se va a posicionar debajo de autoridad limitada y autoridad ilimitada con respecto a eso. So let's just dissect this for a second, because some of us, and you may be in that boat with me, en ese barco, en esa experiencia, some of us, we are very privileged that we have been raising, or we have raised and continue to raise, daughters. Tenemos el privilegio de criar hijas, tal vez nietas. Anybody with nietas? ¿Nietas por ahí? ¿Sí? ¿Nietas? Escúchenme. Look at me. This is huge. Lo que está aquí es extremadamente importante. Porque lo que está haciendo esta mujer, al ser un God-fearer, ¿sí? Es un temerosa de Dios, es que ella ha entendido que esa búsqueda de Dios, esa cuestión de seeking, que decimos, esa cuestión donde está simpatizando y donde ella está asumiendo su responsabilidad, this privilege and responsibility that she's taken on as a woman, as a driven woman, as an influencer, YouTuber, you know, she got places to go, people to see. I mean, se ve que esta mujer, se ve que es agresiva. Potencialmente, no sé si está casada o no, but more than likely she was married. And I don't know if the husband was as driven as she was. I don't know, ladies, anybody with me? Pero es una de las cosas que la mujer típicamente se queja, de que el hombre no se pone las pilas. This is no testimony time, and I'm not going to pass the mic around, pero muchas de las veces es lo que escuchamos de que es nuestra queja, ¿no? Aquí está mi punto, escuchen lo que estoy diciendo. Sí, the point in here is that simply she's going to take and understand based on placing herself under, ladies, placing herself under, ¿sí? What we call limited and unlimited authority. Y déjenme explicar un poquito más acerca de esto. En la cuestión de unlimited authority, obviously, la autoridad ilimitada en la cual ella se posiciona debajo de es la palabra de Dios. It's the Bible. The only thing that has unlimited authority is the scriptures. ¿Sí más o menos por ahí, por el asunto? If God said so, in other words, see, there's a bumper sticker that we have seen in the past that says, if God said it, I believe it, and then I obey it, or something like that. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, if God said it, whether you believe it or not makes no difference. Your belief is not the making or making breaking of the deal, right? Es importante que creamos, pero el punto aquí no es tanto que si lo creo o no lo creo. Si Dios lo dijo, entonces el punto aquí es de que ella se posiciona debajo de la palabra de Dios. Now, once you do this, ladies, once you do this and you place yourself under the authority of the Bible, then you gotta be reminded, tenemos que recordar todos, que al posicionarnos debajo de la palabra de Dios, que es la única autoridad ilimitada, the God of the Bible has established systems on how to operate and exercise his authority. Dios ha escogido sistemas, y hay un diseño original donde hablamos del hogar, que el hombre es cabeza del hogar. See, we speak of the head of, anyways, this is a touchy subject, because obviously, since we have taken our uniqueness and exalted and idolized and demonized, como hemos corrompido completamente el diseño de Dios, este tipo de palabras hoy en día son tóxicas. Este tipo de palabras típicamente de autoridad es abuso. In the minds of a lot of people, there's been abuse. And I know it has been abused. From a pastoral component, there is a book that just recently claimed that is called Pulpit Bully. Y es hablar del abuso espiritual que los pastores tienen sobre la iglesia, which is a two-way conversation, many times at church, over. Does that make sense? What's my point? Here's my point. That in this case, everybody has limited authority. Todos tenemos autoridad limitada. ¿Me explico? Nadie tiene autoridad limitada. The last person who tried to do this and really take on this was pretty much Adam back in Genesis 3. En Génesis capítulo 3, Adán trató de ser como Dios. ¿Recuerdan eso? Se aparece la serpiente and then he's going to go through the whole fall deal because he tried to be like. So here's my point, and this is why I talk about guys. Para los que estamos criando hijas, tal vez nietas, para los que, hey, look at me, guys, if you are dating a young lady or you are married to a lady, see, esa es la razón de que la manera en que nuestra esposa, nuestras hijas y nietas, the way our wives, the way our sisters, the way our daughters and granddaughters, they're going to submit to the leadership of Jesus is by through men who we've been commissioned to join our place, see, este es donde somos copartícipes, men and women, we come together, we submit to one another because we have submitted to the unlimited authority of Jesus. What's my point? Here's my point, young ladies, los abuelos y padres de jovencitas. Ladies, stop choosing men who do not know this language. Because to me, that's the most detrimental thing. Why would you do this to yourself? ¿Por qué permitimos que nuestras hijas, por qué permitimos que nuestras nietas escojan varones, jóvenes, que este lenguaje está completamente de cabeza o que no existe? Why would you do that? Now, on the flip side, guys, if we are abusing and we are neglecting our role to lead by placing ourselves under the unlimited authority of the scriptures and then taking the role that we're called to take in a co-participant, right? Lo hacemos de una manera en la cual, listen to me, there is equality in essence in our relationship, but there is distinction in function. Hay igualdad en nuestra esencia. No hay diferencia entre varón y dama en cuestión de esencia. El valor es exactamente el mismo, pero hay diferencia en función. ¿Cómo funcionamos? So if you go back into the analogy of a football team or a basketball team, you need to have a quarterback. Now, every player is equally valuable, but the functionality is different. Porque si a mí me dan un Tom Brady, me dan un, ¿quién más? Dak, no Dak, I don't want Dak. If you give me one of those super quarterbacks, we have a better chance to win, don't we? Because of the function, el giftiness, obviously. Pero entonces, menciono todo esto porque yo estoy convencido que nuestra cultura, because we have neglected God's original design, there has been a lot of abuse, a lot of abusers, which have been enabled to abuse. Y al final de la conversación, en toda esta disfuncionalidad de abuso, donde ahora tenemos un feminismo, ¿qué dice el feminismo? What did the feminists think? Or how do we function, ladies? See, feminists will say basically, number one, I don't need him, right? Because feminists, they're so confused that they think that the equality in essence is the same as equality in function. And I'm going to say this one more time. My foundation, my biblical understanding, la razón por qué puedo hablar de esto, lo veo ejemplificado en una persona, y es el Dios de la Biblia. The God of the Bible is a God who has chosen to reveal himself in three persons. Hay tres personas dentro del Dios trino. And I've shown it to you before through a pretzel. No lo traigo ahorita en mi pretzel, pero piensen en un pretzel. El pretzel es una sola galleta con tres agujeros. So three holes, one piece of bread, right? So the God of the Bible, which is one, is the same God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Same God. Different functions. Diferentes funcionalidades. How different? Well, they function in a hierarchical manner. ¿Por qué? ¿Cómo sé que actúan y funcionan en jerarquía? Porque el Hijo se somete a quién? Who does he submit to? The Son. To the Father. And the Holy Spirit submits to the Son. So the differences in functionality do not alter, do not change the essence of the individuals. And I'm going to say it one more time. Esta dama llamada Lidia aparentemente entiende esos principios desde el momento en la cual ella entiende that the point of the conversation is not that she worshipped. The point of the conversation is the object of the worship. El punto no es la adoración. El punto es qué cosa. A quién adoramos. Why? I'm going to say that again. Because once you worship the God of the Bible, this takes place. Now, esa es la razón por qué mucha gente no quiere lidiar con esto y prefiere poner su enfoque en qué. Just on a spiritual practice. It's my life. It's the way I want to think. It's my private time with God. I choose the church. Are you listening to the language of autonomy? That this is about? It's about me. So he must, if he does exist, he must accommodate to my experience, where I come from, what happened to me, my frustration, my feelings, my... Y otra vez, ese no es el Dios de la Biblia. Él no se acomoda. Bueno, let me rephrase that. He did accommodate 2,000 years ago. Hace 2,000 años él se acomodó y se adaptó. Al nacer a través de una virgen, caminó por 33 años, tomó nuestro lugar en la cruz, fue puesto en un sepulcro, resucitó al tercer día. ¿Y dónde está ahorita? Where is Jesus right now after the whole premise that I just explained? See, he is literally sitting at the right hand of the Father. So therefore, here's what happens. The Lord opened her heart to respond to the things spoken by Paul. Observen que ahora sí entra esa actividad sobrenatural donde el Dios de la Biblia abre su corazón. So this is what God did. What God revealed to her. Es lo que Dios reveló a ella en un día como este. Reveló que la salvación, literalmente, primeramente, ¿es de quién? You're saved, first and foremost, from God. La salvación de nosotros no es simplemente de un infierno. It does include hell, and I hope and you do understand that you are bound to hell if you don't know Christ. But if you know Jesus this morning, salvation is first and foremost from God. And the God that you need to be saved from is the same God that has chosen to save you as well. So, somos salvos de Dios, somos salvos de nosotros mismos, y somos salvos de un infierno. La implicación de ello, this is how God saves. He saves through covenants, a través de pactos, a través de relaciones que él hace consigo mismo. And here's what I'm going to say, and then I'm going to pray after this. Okay? Les prometo que voy a orar. Sí. El pacto que me encanta a mí enfatizar es el pacto que encontramos en Génesis capítulo 15. This is the beginning of the conversation. Go back, but regresen a cómo inicia la conversación. ¿Por qué? Veanme un ratito. Porque esta mujer es una temerosa de Dios. La implicación es que ella estaba leyendo, ¿qué dijimos? The Hebrew Bible. ¿Recuerdan eso? Está leyendo la Biblia de los Hebreos. Y en la Biblia de los Hebreos, algo que ella encontró y sabe, sí, ella lo ha leído, she's a God-fearer, and then Paul, with his missionary team, showed up in this place. ¿Recuerdan eso? Es como viene la narrativa, y cuando se encuentran, yo estoy convencido que ella está preguntando de esto. In the Hebrew Bible, there is a narrative that God chose Abraham to choose a family, to choose a nation. Es lo que la Biblia enseña. En la cultura judía, Dios escogió a Abraham, escogió a su familia y escogió una nación. Y en esa narrativa, Pablo viene para explicarle a ella lo que está... Sí, otra vez, por favor, escúchenme. When I speak of positioning yourself under limited and unlimited authority, it's precisely that God has chosen individuals to explain the Bible. ¿Cómo es que la Biblia es explicada y aplicada en nuestra vida? Y es lo que está pasando. Entonces, la explicación es simplemente esta, que Dios va a hacer ¿qué cosa? ¿Qué va a hacer Dios? This is how he began from the start. It's through covenants. Hay un pacto que Dios hace con Abraham. Es un pacto que toma lugar. Y lo interesante del pacto, this is the beauty of the gospel, and this is what we're going to pray, and this is what I want you to think for a moment. Eventually, in this covenantal relationship, en este pacto, eventualmente, y otra vez... Piensen, this is culturally, this is how things operated. When you have two kingdoms, cuando tienes dos reinos que se enfrentan, they're in warfare, eventually one is victorious, one is defeated. Sí, en la relación de estos dos reinos, uno gana, otro pierde. And when that is settled, and you have a victor, and then you have a loser, you have someone who's defeated, now they themselves, the kings, the presidents or whatever, the governors, they're going to make a covenant, hacen un treaty. Hacen un covenant. Y el covenant is very simple. This is how they made the covenant. Basically, as a victor, if you are the defeated one, or vice versa, whatever the case may be, el que ganaba le decía al perdedor, this is a covenant. We're gonna shed some blood, because you're gonna do it with blood, and I'll explain to you why. Ponían sangre, derramaban sangre, pero el pacto era esto. Todas tus taxes, todos tus impuestos, todos tus religious practices, and your governmental systems, they're gone. Now you're gonna adopt mine. Sí, vas a adoptar, te conviertes, en inglés se dice, you're a vassal, eres un representante mío ahora, eso es lo que significa. And that's how we're going to coexist, es la manera en que vamos a existir. Eso se llevaba a cabo, el covenant era written, era an agreement, el blood era puesto, because blood represents life, la sangre representa vida. And the one who will walk through the blood, look at me, it was the defeated king. El perdedor, el que perdía, caminaba, because what the defeated king is basically saying to the conquering king is this: we're in agreement with this covenant, estamos de acuerdo con la estipulación de este pacto, y al caminar por la sangre, the implication is that if this covenant is broken, the defeated king walking through the blood is basically saying, I will pay with my own life. Mi propia vida va a ser la manera en que voy a pagar si este pacto es quebrado. Now, look at the narrative. Dios está haciendo un pacto con Abraham. Mismo escenario. Literally, is God speaking with Abraham. This is a vision. Abraham está teniendo una visión. Ese es un sueño. He's having a dream. And in the dream, observen lo que sucede. In el dream, now it came about when the sun had set that it was very dark, and behold, there is the blood. Sacrifice has been done already. The articulation already took in place. A smoking oven and a flaming torch appear. El concepto de una, de un, de fuego, de lumbre. This is the concept of the Shekinah glory. This is the presence of God. Dios se aparece, which pass between the blood. What's the point? That the difference of the gospel, and this lady is being confronted with this, is that when it comes to making a covenant with God, God is not expecting nor asking for you to walk through the blood. He is the one who walks through the blood. Esto es lo que se le dice un foreshadowing. Eso está anunciando. Porque miles de años después, este sueño se hace realidad a través de un carpintero. Su nombre es Cristo Jesús. Jesus shows up. And it's not the blood of animals. Like in this case, Abraham killed animals and shed the blood. Innocent animals. But 2,000 years ago, there was one person who took the place of those animals. ¿Recuerdan el nombre de ese sacrificio perfecto? Que derramó su sangre en una cruz. Y no solamente iba a derramar la sangre de él, pero literalmente es Dios el que está pasando por en medio de la sangre. Is God walking through the blood. And this is the message conveyed to Abraham thousands of years later to a lady by the name of Lydia, to the Apostle Paul. When, if and when this covenant is broken, because we're making a covenant, if it's broken, you will not pay for it. I will pay for it, even though you will be the one breaking it. Aunque tú quiebres, violes, rompas este pacto, no vas a ser tú quien va a pagar, sino voy a ser yo. Y por eso es que Dios eventualmente provee al sacrificio perfecto, al cordero inmolado, decimos, ¿verdad? He is the perfect sacrifice. He's the man of sorrows. He's the one who kept himself quiet in the context of sacrifice. Y Cristo viene y literalmente entrega nuestra vida. De tal manera que Cristo, watch this. This is the huge step of the message. Is that Jesus is going to eventually take the blame that belonged to us. Él tomó la culpa, la responsabilidad. And then his perfection and his obedience and his holiness and righteousness was transferred to us. This is the message that this lady is going to receive from Paul. And I believe on a Mother's Day message, that's the message that we need, ladies. Brothers, that's the message that we need from Jesus once again. Necesitamos ser recordados de que hace 2,000 años, el Cristo, el resucitado, el Cordero Inmolado, tomó nuestro lugar para perdonar no solamente nuestro pecado, pero para darnos vida eterna. To give us the perfection of his life, so we can become brand new people in Christ. I'm going to ask you, as you go home, maybe lunch and then home later this afternoon, finish the story. Just read one more verse, because I'm not going to read it for you. But the very next verse from where we are is exactly the result of what happened. And I'll just give you the preview. She's going to get the entire household baptized. And she's going to bring the apostles into the household to see the conversion of the entire family. Familias completas, avivamiento, el evangelio entró, plantaron iglesias. Because of someone understanding the message of the gospel. She was a doer, she was a go-getter, she was driven, and all of that was submitted to the God who did. Es el Dios que ya lo hizo. Damas, por mucho que tenemos que hacer, por mucho que necesitamos hacer y deseamos hacer, el evangelio dice que ya está hecho. Nuestra confianza está puesta no en nuestra habilidad, no en nuestras capacidades, está puesta en lo que el Dios de la Biblia hizo a través de las edades. And today, this experience, this sacrifice is available to all of us.